Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is the Midland Reporter Telegram Weekend Edition for Saturday, January 3rd, 2026. MRT Citizen of the Year, Rocky Guzman, a protector at heart. Rocky Guzman is passionate about community service and safety. With their votes, Midlanders have honored him for his efforts. Originally from La Mesa, Rocky says he knew as a kid what he wanted to do in life. Quote, I wanted to be in the military, I wanted to be a fireman, and I wanted to move to Midland, end quote. After serving 6 years as a U.S. Army infantryman right out of high school, which included year-long tours in Iraq and Afghanistan, Rocky came straight to Midland to join the city's fire department. He started as a cadet, became a paramedic, then moved to a fire investigator role, and in 2025 was named fire marshal. He's been a Midlander now for a decade and a half, and his contributions to the safety and security of the community have certainly been impactful, and the community has made that clear. Guzman was one of 9 people nominated by the community for their contributions. Residents voted en masse, choosing Rocky as MRT's first ever Citizen of the Year. Rocky was nominated because he, quote, exemplifies the standards of leadership, service, and integrity within the Midland Fire Department and the community he works tirelessly to protect, end quote. Quote, I just hope that I can continue to meet our city's high standards and I'll always do what I can to keep them safe, end quote. Rocky said when informed of the honor. It's been years since he's driven an ambulance, but even though he now focuses on fire prevention and investigating causes, he still maintains his paramedic certification out of reverence to his roots at MFD. Pride in the profession, and just in case he's needed. Quote, there have been a few times I've come upon incidents like car crashes, and I've stopped to render aid to those who've been injured, even as a fire investigator, end quote, Rocky said. He helps without hesitation, he serves without a second thought, he cares about the community, and that's why Midland chose Rocky Guzman as the Citizen of the Year. Quote, thank you to all the residents in the Midland community for voting. I'm deeply honored, and I'll do my best to make you proud, end quote. New Mexico sues Midland Energy Companies. Alleges fraud scheme that left the state with hundreds of leaking, unplugged wells. New Era Energy and Digital is planning to build a large data center in Ettrick County. However, the recently renamed company and its CEO are now defendants in a lawsuit brought by the state of New Mexico. The state alleges New Era CEO E. Will Gray II and his former business partners Robert Stitzel and Marquise Reed Gilmore Jr.'s associated companies attempted to pocket revenues from hundreds of oil and gas wells while leaving New Mexico on the hook for plugging and cleanup. Of particular issue for the state is evidence that many of the abandoned wells are spewing methane. Quote, New Mexicans are suffering from adverse health risks and bear the brunt of environmental harms caused by these companies failing to uphold their agreed-upon duty to responsibly plug oil and gas wells when they are no longer in production, end quote, Attorney General Raul Torres said in a statement. Quote, I will not stand by while bad actors take advantage of the system. Avoiding responsibility, burdening the state with costly remediation, and recklessly endangering the health of New Mexicans, end quote. New Era responded in a press release. Quote, the New Mexico lawsuit is a baseless and uniformed attack on our company and on our chairman and chief executive officer, E. Will Gray II. We will aggressively defend New Era and its leadership in court against these false allegations, end quote. Formation, legislation, and bankruptcy. Remnant Oil Operating formed in Texas in 2015 under the name WS Oil and Gas Operating and registered in New Mexico that same year, according to the lawsuit filing. WS changed its name to Remnant in 2016. Remnant was owned by Gray through his companies WS Oil and Gas and First Gray Corp. Stitzel through his companies RS Resources and Stitzel Corp. And Gilmore through his companies Gilmore Oil and Gas and Bluebird Energy Corp. Gray, Stitzel, and Gilmore each had a 1/3 stake in Remnant, and the company purchased about 580 wells on both public and private lands between 2015 and 2018 from a handful of operators. The lawsuit indicates many of these assets were so-called stripper wells, or marginal oil and gas wells near the end of their productive lives. Stripper wells still produce small amounts of oil and gas, though not enough to be very profitable, often making just enough revenue to operate, but not enough to fund plugging and remediation. New Mexico requires financial assurance from operators that plugging and remediation will actually be paid for through bonds, letters of credit, or other approved financial instruments. In February 2018, the New Mexico legislature authorized the, quote, blanket bond, end quote, amount to be increased from $50,000 per well to $250,000. Remnant couldn't comply with these new regulations, the state says. By December 2018, 492 of Remnant's wells were out of compliance with the new regulations. The company reached a settlement with the state to plug 40 wells by July 31, 2019. Court documents indicate Gray, acting as Remnant CEO, signed this agreement. On February 27, 2019, Remnant secured a $2.9 million loan from Midland-based First Capital Bank of Texas, but did not plug any abandoned wells. Instead, the state alleges Remnant paid about $469,000 to Gray through WS Oil and Gas for, quote, consulting services and expenses, end quote. With fulfillment of the compliance deadline days away, Remnant filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy on July 16, 2019, with Gray signing the filing and Gilmore and Stitzel acting as witnesses, the state says, adding that Gray filed a declaration in the bankruptcy proceedings that Remnant operated 142 wells that were offline and not capable of producing economically at oil prices at the time. Remnant claimed in August 2019 that its oil and gas assets had a market value of $22 million. Chapter 11 bankruptcy enables a company to restructure its debt. However, in November 2019, various creditors filed a joint motion to convert the proceedings to Chapter 7 liquidation, citing, quote, gross mismanagement and substantial and continuing losses, end quote, court documents show. The state further says debtors claimed management sought to pay insider equity contributions as legitimate debt and received significant transfers of money in the one-year period prior to bankruptcy. New companies, new accusations, new bankruptcy. A conversion to Chapter 7 was approved in April 2020. Gray, Stitzel, and Gilmore formed placeholder company NewCo Energy Resources to bid on certain but not all Remnant wells, the lawsuit says. Lexon Insurance Company, which held several surety bonds, objected to the sale. It observed that the splitting up of Remnant's well inventory would sell off higher-producing wells to NewCo, making it likely that the remaining wells would be abandoned to the state, giving New Mexico the right to forfeit financial assurances provided by Lexon. On June 23, 2020, a judge ordered changes to the sale order to include both productive and net liability wells, and NewCo abandoned its bid. That same month, Acacia Operating was formed in Texas by Gilmore's Houston-based attorney, Harold N. Happ May, and was registered in New Mexico in July. Acacia was initially headquartered in Houston and run by May's associate, Carl Winter, who also managed NewCo. Remnant's $22 million asset valuation had, quote, declined precipitously, end quote, by June 2020, the state says. The final sale terms required Acacia to pay $402,000 cash and assume liens valued at $5.5 million. After the bankruptcy court approved the sale of Remnant's assets to Acacia, Gilmore replaced Winter as manager. Neither May nor Winter are listed as defendants in the lawsuit. Acacia registered as a new operator in September 2020 and received approval in February 2021. However, a year passed before Acacia applied to take over Remnant's wells. Acacia Operating is fully owned by Acacia Resources, in which Gilmore holds an 80% stake and Stitzel owns a 20% stake. The state claims Stitzel, who led the process of establishing Acacia as a new operator, did not inform New Mexico's Oil Conservation Division that Gilmore held a majority stake in Acacia Resources when he filled out OCD's Change of Operator C-145 form. The state requires applicants to disclose whether any person with a 25% or greater ownership interest is or was within the past 5 years an officer, director, partner, or any person with a greater than 25% owner of another operator that is out of compliance with plugging and remediation rules. Both Stitzel and Gilmore had a greater than 25% stake in Remnant, which was out of compliance in December 2018. During the course of Remnant's bankruptcy, Gilmore provided two debtor-in-possession, DIP, loans to the company and acquired a third. The first was provided by Gilmore Oil and Gas, totaling $350,000 and allowing salary payments to Gray and Stitzel of $15,000 per month each. A second $750,000 DIP loan was provided by Colorado Waterson LLC, but was later acquired by Gilmore's Cibolo Energy Resources, which also provided a third loan in the amount of $250,000. In all, Gilmore held DIP loans totaling $1.35 million. The state says Stutzel emailed OCD and said Ocasio couldn't become an operator until the debts that survived bankruptcy were settled. Gilmore's DIP loans and a purported $400,000 debt remnant owed to Gray's WS Oil and Gas. The state says Ocasio sold remnants 87 best wells on July 14, 2021, to Gray's Solis Partners, which, like Ocasio, was created during Remnant's bankruptcy, and alleges that wells were effectively given away. The bill of sale lists a purchase price of just $10, and the state says Ocasio received no real economic value in the deal. No meaningful cash, no assumption of Ocasio's liabilities, and no benefit that could fund plugging and remediation. The change of operator application was signed on behalf of Remnant by Gray and was signed on behalf of Solis Partners by Joel Solis, who is not listed as a defendant. The state claims Gray tried to conceal his involvement with Solis Partners by directing Joel Solis to sign as transferee. OCD was unaware of the relationship and approved the transfer on February 2, 2022. Gray would sign on behalf of Solis Partners and later C-145 transfer applications. The state alleges Solis Partners is an, quote, alter ego, end quote, for Gray. It claims Gray dominated and controlled Solis Partners from its inception and used it as a shell company to receive valuable wells while leaving liabilities behind. New Mexico also says their well transfer left Ocasio insolvent. The remainder of Remnant's wells were transferred to Ocasio in subsequent years, with final approval being received August 5, 2024. On December 27, 2024, Ocasio Operating and Ocasio Resources filed for Chapter 7 liquidation 2 weeks after ConocoPhillips filed a lawsuit in Lee County. Conoco was a leaseholder on certain New Mexico oil and gas properties, including on state trust lands. Ocasio was the operator on these leases. Conoco's lawsuit sought to enforce Ocasio's, quote, duty to plug 6 inactive oil and gas wells and remediate and reclaim the affected lands, end quote, court documents show. With Ocasio insolvent, the state, as the plugger of last resort, is left to spend millions of dollars plugging and remediating hundreds of wells, some of which OCD has shown are leaking methane into the air and produced water onto the ground, the lawsuit says. New Mexico isn't taking this lightly. Gray's latest venture sued and squeezed. The state of New Mexico announced its lawsuit December 23rd, the same day Gray's New Era Energy and Digital announced it was buying out its partner in their Texas Critical Data Centers project, which is to be built in Ector County. Holding a 50% stake, Sharon AI agreed to a $70 million deal, $10 million in cash, $10 million in deferred equity, and a $50 million senior secured promissory note, $40 million of which is non-convertible debt. On December 12th, anonymous short seller group Fuzzy Panda Research published a lengthy post on its website recommending investors short New Era stock, which trades on the NASDAQ under the ticker NUAI. Fuzzy Panda argued the company is not a legitimate AI data center player and that it is focused heavily on promotional spending to inflate its stock price. Quote, we are a shareholder-focused company and have kept investors updated with our project status via multiple channels. We take false claims against our company seriously, and especially when it is to mislead and manipulate the market, end quote, Gray said in a statement. Quote, we have had no interaction with Fuzzy Panda. Management and our board remain steadfast in developing and moving our project forward with several key announcements to come in the coming weeks, end quote. Gray urged investors to rely on its SEC filings and formal disclosures. New Era changed both its business focus and name this year. Gray founded New Era Helium in 2023 with plans to extract helium and natural gas from the Pecos Slope field in southeastern New Mexico. The company changed its name August 13th, began trading on the NASDAQ under a new ticker symbol, and marked a shift away from helium and natural gas exploration to becoming a vertically integrated energy and digital infrastructure provider. New Era's operating entity is Solis Partners, according to the company. Gray founded Pecos Slope Holdings in March 2021, according to state records. It had a tax forfeiture 2 years later, but was reinstated in December 2023 and remains active. Pecos Slope had a 6.68% ownership stake in New Era in December 2024, per Schedule 13D filings with the SEC, which are required when an investor owns more than a 5% stake in a company. Gray's New Era and Pecos Slope are defendants in the lawsuit. The state argues that the value of the 87 wells transferred to Solis Partners ended up under these companies' control, and as such, the liability for plugging must follow. Quote, the 87 wells referenced in the lawsuit are immaterial to our current business, end quote, New Era said in response to the lawsuit. Quote, these wells no longer align with the company's business model, and we were already in the process of divesting them, in line with our focus on our digital infrastructure business, end quote. New Era claims the lawsuit has, quote, myriad factual errors and misstatements, end quote, and that New Mexico's OCD made no attempt to contact the company. Quote, the bottom line is that New Era will not be distracted by misguided attacks, end quote, the company said. Quote, we will continue to execute our business plans and work to deliver value to all our stakeholders. We look forward to providing further updates on our core business as we continue to announce key milestones on our Ector County Data Center complex, end quote. Investors appear to be squeezing the New Era stock. FINRA data show short interest leapt 140% to 2 million shares at the October 31st settlement date, then another 189% to 5.8 million shares for November 14th. November 28th was the most current settlement date at the time of Fuzzy Panda Research's report, when just under 6 million shares were shorted. Its percent of float, or the total short positions relative to the number of shares available to trade, was 1268%. The latest FINRA data for December 15th show short interest has jumped another 50% to just under 9 million shares. Percent of float also jumped to 18.95%. An August 2025 article by Charles Schwab on Short Squeeze says, quote, most stocks have a small amount of short interest, usually in the single digits. The higher that percentage, the greater the bearish sentiment may be around that stock. If the short percentage of the float reaches 10% or higher, that could be a warning sign, end quote. NUAI's short price fell more than 50% in 2025, closing December 31st at $2.39 per share. Respiratory virus season begins. The respiratory virus season has begun in Texas. According to the Texas Department of State Health Services, DSHS, the number of emergency room visits due to causes such as COVID-19, influenza, flu, and the respiratory syncytial virus, RSV, has all increased as of December 20th. Additionally, DSHS reports that the number of hospitalizations has increased as well. This year, the Associated Press has reported that cases of influenza, flu, are rising rapidly due to a new variant of the virus. The variant is known as, quote, subclade K, end quote, which has already led to early outbreaks in other countries. On December 30th, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention reported high or very high levels of illness in more than half of the U.S. What is the subclade K flu? The influenza virus is known as a shapeshifter virus that mutates. Subclade K is a mutated version of the two subtypes of type A flu, commonly known as H3N2. According to the CDC, the H3N2 flu strain is difficult, especially for older adults. Quote, respiratory virus season typically happens from October to May, peaking in the winter, end quote, DSHS said in its Texas Respiratory Illness Dashboard. Quote, however, respiratory viruses circulate year-round, so infection is possible at any time. DSHS created an interactive respiratory illness dashboard so all Texans, such as healthcare providers, local leaders, and public health jurisdictions, can monitor illness trends, end quote. Here's what DSHS recommends in order to prevent a respiratory illness this winter season. Get vaccinated. Get a flu shot now. DSHS said, this is the best way to protect yourself and others from various flu illness. Quote, we urge everyone 6 months old and older to get vaccinated every flu season, end quote, said DSHS. Stop the spread. Wash your hands often. Cover your coughs and sneezes. Stay home from school or work if you are feeling ill. Clean common surfaces like doorknobs, handles, and keyboards. In Midland County, public data from the DSHS indicates that cases are increasing. The most cases thus far as of December 20th is for children between the ages of 5 and 11 years old. The second highest is for children between the age group of 12 to 17 years old. Val Sparks, an infection preventionist with Midland Health, offered this advice to residents earlier in the year. Quote, people who have flu often feel some or all of these symptoms, fever or feeling feverish slash chills, cough, sore throat, runny or stuffy nose, muscle or body aches, headaches and fatigue, tiredness, end quote, she said. Quote, others may have vomiting and diarrhea, though this is more common in children than in adults. It's important to note that not everyone with flu will have a fever, end quote. How does the flu spread? Sparks wrote that the flu virus spreads mainly through tiny droplets that are released when people with flu cough, sneeze, or even talk. Quote, these droplets can land in the mouths or noses of people who are nearby, end quote, she said. Quote, less often a person might get the flu by touching a surface or object that has flu virus on it, and then touching their own mouth, nose, or possibly eyes, end quote. Am I contagious? Typically, people diagnosed with the flu are most contagious within the first 3 to 4 days after their illness begins. The time from exposure and infection with the flu to the full onset of symptoms range from 1 to 4 days. Life Tributes. Bobby Ann McGinn. 5/31/1941 to 12/24/2025. May 31st, 1941 to December 24th, 2025, Bobby Ann McGinn, resident of Midland, Texas, passed away on Wednesday, December 24, 2025, at the age of 84. Born in Pecos, Texas, on May 31, 1941, to Bob and Nita Blaylock, Bobby grew up alongside her brother, Sheldon, and sister, Donna. Bobby is survived by her sister, Donna Adams, her sons, Jim Bob McNeil, Leslie, and Vance McNeil, Amber, her daughter, Leslie Yurita Enrique, her stepson, Tim McGinn, Liza, and her stepdaughter, Moira Britton, Doug. She leaves behind a rich legacy through her grandchildren, Taryn Smith Fletch, Jordan Agar, Gary, Connor McNeil, Taylor, Cade McNeil, Marley McNeil, Bryce Davis, Katie, Sterling Yurita, Callie, Cheyenne Yurita, Max McGinn, Christine McGinn, Zach McGinn, Ayn Henderson, Austin, and Daria Britton, as well as 8 great-grandchildren. Sutton, Sawyer, Andy, Arch, Elsie, Lily, Ty, and Sage. She was preceded in death by her parents, Robert and Nita Blaylock, her brother Sheldon, her granddaughter Samantha Davis, and her husband Bob McGinn. Funeral services for family and friends will be held at Sunset Memorial Garden and Funeral Home in Odessa, Texas, on Wednesday, January 7, 2026, at 10 o'clock a.m. Paul Bears, Bryce Davis, Sterling Yurita, Connor McNeil, Cade McNeil, Fletch Smith, Gary Agar, and Zach McGinn. Honorary pallbearer, Max McGinn. Memorials. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations may be made to the Manor Park of Midland. Arrangements are entrusted to Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home. To send condolences to the family, please sign her guest book at www.sunsetodessa.com. Casey Michael Smith, 5/24/1984 to 12/28/2025. Casey Michael Smith, 41, of Midland, passed away on Sunday, December 28, 2025. Services will be held at 3:30 p.m. on Monday, January 5, 2026, at Midland County Horseshoe. Casey was born on May 24, 1984, in Midland, Texas, to Mike Smith and Sabrina Edwards. Casey is survived by Mom Sabrina Tarpley Edwards, Dad Mike Smith, Pam, Mallory Smith, and daughter Harper Smith. Brother Tanner Smith, Kim, sister Brody Sims, Peyton, brother Hunter Smith, Michaela, stepbrother Brandon Prather, and stepbrother Patrick Prather, Memory, very special Gurney Willa Rowe, as well as numerous aunts, uncles, nieces, nephews, cousins, and the Spencer boys. Casey is preceded in death by stepdad Dan Edwards, Papa Jim Tarpley, Granny Laureen Tarpley, Papa Gerard Smith, Granny Maxine Smith, and lifelong friend Nathan Spencer. Honorary pallbearers will be Cody Kennard, Talion Thompson, Corey Wisman, Chase Lawson, Drew McBride, Hunter Smith, Patrick Prather, Brandon Prather, Jake Quinn, Tyson Wisman, Tanner Smith, Daniel Howard, Mark Taliaferro, Chad Evans, Kenny Bradford, Peyton Sims, Tanner Allen, Bernie Phillips, and Randy Watson. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Preston Scott Barton, 12/8/2000 to 12/16/2025. It is with heavy hearts that we share Preston Scott Barton went home to be with the Lord December 16th, 2025. Preston was born on December 8, 2000 in Midland, Texas to Michael Scott Barton and Nicole Myers. Preston is preceded in death by his grandmother Margaret Burney, grandfather Jack Shorty Burney, and his aunt Carol Jan Fuller. He is survived by his father Michael Scott Barton, his mother Nicole Myers, grandmother Candy Myers, his brother Brady Barton, also his aunt Larry Cole, Uncle Steve Cole, and Uncle Steve Fuller, his cousins Cameron Cole and wife Kathleen Cole, Alexa Cole, Brandon Fuller, Tori Fuller, and husband Tyler Arnold. His younger cousins, who he adored and they adored him, Blakely, Brooks, Maverick, Carter, Cooper Rose, and Colin. The family will host a celebration of life at a later date. Fire crews battle multi-semi-fire in Odessa. Odessa. Odessa Fire Rescue responded to a fire involving multiple semi-trucks that may have set off a chemical reaction. According to a press release from city officials, OFR stated, the fire occurred Wednesday at 129 Solo Road, located south of Rick's Cabaret. The incident, said officials, involved multiple semi-trucks, Konex boxes, piles of railroad tires, and a rubber hose. Quote, according to bystander statements, the fire may have been caused by a chemical reaction, end quote, said city officials. MDC to vote on $650,000 in consulting deals. Members of the Midland Development Corp. Board of Directors will say farewell to outgoing members Zach Deck, Jill Pennington, and Lorsey Sams at the board's first monthly meeting of the year. They will then elect officers to serve through 2026. Board members will then consider a resolution executing a $240,000 consulting agreement with DTH Strategies for Strategic and Public Affairs Consulting and Advocacy for the MDC. The advocacy will focus on helping MDC navigate Texas state government, including the Governor's Office, State Texas Space Commission, Texas Department of Transportation, Texas Legislature, and executive branch agencies. Mode Communications will offer a presentation on a proposed messaging and communications campaign for the MDC. The $150,000 consulting services agreement is designed to move beyond creating awareness of Midland space and space-related industries, but build confidence in its future, demonstrating the connection between infrastructure, workforce, and job creation. Board members will also consider continuing MDC's relationship with Interflight Global, which has worked to help procure tenants for the Spaceport Business Park. They will vote on a resolution approving a $225,000 consultant services agreement with the company. Another resolution to be voted on at the monthly meeting is approval of a $35,000 consulting services agreement with Integrated Launch Solutions for Spaceport Licensing Support Services, including risk assessments and gap analyses for the MDC in support of the development of an inland vertical orbital launch range. City limits new right-of-way patios to sidewalks after safety concerns. An ordinance has been approved to amend Title IX, quote, public ways and property, end quote, of the Midland City Code with a new chapter. Titled, quote, Chapter 8, Right-of-Way Patio Program, end quote, the ordinance establishes regulations on businesses that feature a patio space facing the street of their property, particularly in downtown where most of these right-of-ways exist. However, the ordinance was also altered from its original language as Midland City Council discussed the safety aspect of the ordinance. Quote, Midland has great weather the majority of the year, so this takes advantage of that, end quote, said the city's planning and development officer, Elizabeth Triggs. Quote, how nice would it be to have during Midland's merry lights, to also have the opportunity to have more outdoor seating spaces to enjoy the lights while you're having dinner with your family, end quote. According to Triggs and city staff, the ordinance was needed because there was no coded authorization or regulation of ROW patios, and there was little or no private space for these kinds of patios to develop throughout the city, with many downtown buildings being built to the lot line. In addition to setting a consistent set of rules, the ordinance is designed to balance creation of patio spaces, including expediting the process to have them approved, with accommodations for normal pedestrians, the Americans with Disabilities Act, and emergency routes. Quote, as is, it's really difficult for business owners to know they can legally take advantage of the public right-of-way for this process, end quote, Triggs said. Quote, it also requires that they go through council, which is a lengthy process, and so this ordinance enables us to approve those permits administratively and helps manage expectations on how businesses can do this. More business-friendly, less red tape, end quote. Eligible businesses are those that are directly positioned by a ROW and whose service benefits from outdoor seating or gathering. An example of the former can be seen with businesses on West Wall Street opposite Centennial Park, which feature parallel parking ROWs on the street. In the latter case, examples of benefiting businesses include restaurants including cafes, bars including breweries, wineries, and distilleries, coffee shops, bakeries, hotels, and mixed-use retail and entertainment. The city has written up a design manual that goes into detail on the regulations, which will be available to businesses once the ordinance goes into effect. Although commending Triggs and her team for their work, several council members criticized the ordinance as written, in particular regarding the proximity of seating areas to the streets themselves. While the patios are designed as a way of forcing traffic downtown to slow down, there are concerns that the patio's positioning will increase the risk of people getting struck by vehicles, alongside possible insufficiencies in the measures designed to protect people from such outcome. Quote, I have just a lot of reservations when it comes to putting tables and chairs out on the asphalt with minimal barriers, end quote, said Councilman-at-Large John Burkholder. Quote, I hope we're not putting people in harm's way for the sake of adding more tables and chairs. In good conscience, I cannot move forward with approving something that could potentially put people in danger, end quote. Triggs said that to address this, the ordinance limits ROW patios to streets with a low speed limit, as well as from being a certain distance away from intersections. Fencing and barriers are also required to be made out of sufficiently durable materials and other physical barriers, such as reflective posts and curb stops, and must conform with regulations by Midland's Fire, Engineering, and Transportation Departments. Quote, any locations we do consider candidates, we want to make sure the environment is safe, end quote, said Assistant City Manager Jose Ortiz. Quote, anytime we do have a location, we will definitely make sure that staff has looked into this, scrutinizing the very scenario, making sure that we do not have high-speed corridors that are being exposed to any ROWs in the city, end quote. Additionally, with the recent ordinance on city parking, placing patios in places currently used for parallel parking was noted by Mayor Pro Tem Robin Poole as apparently counterintuitive to that other ordinance. Also, several council members expressed serious concern over the fact that the businesses will be eligible to apply for alcohol to be consumed on the patios, although businesses would need to reapply with the Texas Alcoholic Beverage Commission to extend their boundaries to include their patios, potentially putting their customers at even higher risk. Quote, I can just see down Wall Street in front of Cancun and Pi Social, if we fill all of those parking spots up with patios, that's where we already have so much congestion and people parking in the middle of Wall Street and double parking, end quote, said Poole. Quote, I think that just adds to an already existing problem, and I think it's a bit counterintuitive to fill those spaces up when they're in such high demand for drivers, end quote. Because of these concerns, City Council supported limiting the patios to the sidewalk and coming back a year later after more research is done, including with cities that have ROW patios. City Council voted 6-0 to approve this amended ordinance at its December 15th meeting, with Mayor Lori Blong being absent. The amendment will go into effect on February 1st, 2026. Quote, we need to make sure that we do this correctly, end quote, said Councilman Brian Stubbs. Quote, I know that a lot of cities do this. In Austin, I think every block has a little ROW like this. but they've probably eased into it and have different driving habits than we do. I do like the idea of street parking, but let's err on the side of safety, and let's do the sidewalk ones and see how it goes, end quote. Eateries that opened in Midland in 2025. New restaurants, coffee shops, and ice cream shops have been rolling in regularly since the new year. Here's a recap of all the new establishments that came to the Tall City in 2025. McDonald's, February 6th. A new McDonald's opened at 2301 West Missouri Avenue. This is Midland's fifth McDonald's restaurant, which is at the site of the former Chase Bank building. Smalls, Sliders, and Taco Bell are expected to open in the same area in 2026. Cafeology, February 24th. Cafeology, a locally owned coffee and pastry shop, opened in Midland this year. The coffee shop is located at 4610 North Garfield Street. Business hours are 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday to Friday and 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. on Saturday. St. Blaise, March 6th. St. Blaise offers American comfort food, classic cocktails, and more of owner Lee Sanchez's favorite foods. The restaurant is located at 508 West Wall Street, Suite 150. Business hours are 8 a.m. to 10 p.m. Monday to Thursday, 8 a.m. to 11 p.m. on Friday, 10 a.m. to 11 p.m. on Saturday, and 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. on Sunday. Long John Silver's in Odessa, March 11th. Long John Silver's reopened with a fresh new design at 1418 South County Road West in Odessa. The restaurant is open Sunday through Thursday from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. and Friday through Saturday from 10 a.m. to 11 p.m. Crumb, a micro bakery, April 10th. Crumb, a micro bakery, offers a variety of French croissants for customers to enjoy. The pastry shop is located at the Midland Park Mall, two doors down from Ulta Beauty. The bakery is open from 7 a.m. to 2 p.m. Tuesday through Friday, and from 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. on Saturday. Kilwin's Midland, May 30th. Kilwin's opened at the Summit Center, 3200 Mockingbird Lane, offering handcrafted confections and ice cream. The sweet shop is open from 11 a.m. to 9 p.m. Monday through Saturday, and from noon to 9 p.m. on Sunday. Domino's, June 17th. A Domino's opened at 6400 North Highway 349. The pizza restaurant is open for delivery and takeout from 10 a.m. to 1 a.m. Sunday through Thursday, and 10 a.m. to 2 a.m. Friday through Saturday. Bluebird Deli and Goods, July 2nd. Bluebird Deli and Goods opened in the lobby of the Wilco Tower, 415 West Wall Street, Suite 104. The deli offers a breakfast and lunch menu, alongside an assortment of grab-and-go options and a stocked convenience store. Business hours are Monday through Friday from 7:30 a.m. to 3 p.m. Main Squeeze Juice Company, July 18th. Main Squeeze Juice Company opened in Midland, offering cold-pressed juices, smoothies, acai bowls, and more. The juice shop is in the new Crosswinds Plaza at 5711 Deauville Boulevard. Business hours are 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Monday through Saturday and 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. on Sunday. Rudy's Barbecue, September 10th. Rudy's Country Store and Barbecue opened in Midland, offering a variety of barbecue classics such as brisket, baby back ribs, pork, chicken, and more. The country store is located at 4711 Loop 250 Frontage Road. Business hours are 6 a.m. to 9 p.m. Sunday through Thursday and 6 a.m. to 10 p.m. Friday through Saturday. Tarzan Grill and PJ's Coffee Shop, September 10th. The DK Tarzan and Jane Travel Center hosted its grand opening ceremony on September 12th. The Travel Center features the DK Gas Station and Tarzan and Jane Convenience Store at 8404 West County Road 60. Visitors can order the famous Tarzan Grill burgers, breakfast burritos, or fresh brewed coffee and beignets from PJ's Coffee. Baskin-Robbins, September 18th. A new Baskin-Robbins location opened at 6900 North State Highway 349 in the Pagosa Shopping Center. The ice cream shop is open from 11 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. daily. Santamar, October 27th. Santamar offers customers a unique fine dining experience with its contemporary cuisine and handcrafted cocktails. The menu brings a fusion of land and sea to the upscale restaurant located at 418 West Wadley Avenue. Business hours are 11 a.m. to 10 p.m. Sunday through Thursday and 11 a.m. to 11 p.m. Friday and Saturday. TNT Donuts, December 4th. The TNT Donuts on Midkiff Road reopened on December 6th, 2 years after it closed down. The beloved donut shop is located at 210 North Midkiff Road. Business hours are 5 a.m. to 2 p.m. and 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. daily. Don Quinto Bar and Grill, December 5th. Don Quinto Bar and Grill officially opened downtown with a ribbon-cutting ceremony on December 5th. The restaurant offers a fusion of Mexican and West Texas flavors with dishes such as Peraladas, barbecues, burgers, tacos, and more. Don Quinto is located at 100 North Main Street, Unit 100. Business hours are 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. and 5 p.m. to 9 p.m. Monday to Wednesday, and 11 a.m. to 9 p.m. Thursday to Saturday. Oil Report, ExxonMobil. Energy Transfer may convert pipeline to gas. Energy Transfer is considering converting a pipeline that moves natural gas liquids out of the Permian Basin to natural gas service amid weak NGL pricing and strong gas demand. If the company makes the conversion, quote, the project would add to the industry bandwagon for new gas pipelines out of the Permian Basin, end quote, according to East Daily Analytics. The company's model forecasts more than 10 billion cubic feet per day of new Permian gas takeaway through 2030 from projects with a final investment decision, including several by Energy Transfer, the Whitewater joint venture backing the Eiger Express Pipeline, which was recently upsized, Whitewater's Black Comb, and Energy Transfer's Hugh Brinson Pipelines. These projects are scheduled to start through 2027, and the Eiger Express and Energy Transfer's Desert Southwest will add more takeaway by the end of the decade. What it means for natural gas prices, especially at the Waha Hub in Reeves County, where prices have gone negative a number of times, is basis relief. Quote, the key point is this impacts Waha more through basis relief than through Henry Hub outright, end quote. Jackson Fryer with East Daily told the Reporter-Telegram. Any ability to move Permian gas out of the basin tends to reduce the frequency / severity of constraint events, including negative price episodes, and strengthen Waha versus Henry Hub over time. As new egress comes online, Waha should generally firm up through less trapped gas, especially if oil stays flat and associated gas growth doesn't overwhelm the new pipes, he added. Quote, that said, the magnitude matters. A small conversion would be incremental versus the much larger new build or expansion wave already in motion out of the Permian, end quote, he said. In other words, near term, Waha can stay soft because production is still large and the system is still working through constraints, maintenance, and timing of new capacity. Medium / late decade risk. If gas takeaway is truly overbuilt and producers respond by growing gas harder than expected, that can cap how much Waha strengthens. The Permian, quote, fills the pipe, end quote, and discounts persist but are less chaotic. Quote, bottom line, we do think the market is moving toward stronger Waha and fewer blowouts, but it's more a story about basis normalization and volatility reduction than an immediate step change in absolute gas prices, end quote, Fryer said. Pipelines joining portfolio trend. Portfolio optimization is not limited to exploration and production companies as they shed properties deemed non-core. Pipeline companies are also examining their portfolios to determine what assets could be repurposed. One example is Energy Transfer, which is evaluating whether to convert a Permian natural gas liquids line to natural gas service. Management said in the company's third quarter earnings call, converting the candidate pipe would roughly double revenue in gas versus NGL service given weak NGL rates and strong gas demand. East Daily Analytics expects Permian Y-grade takeaway to be overbuilt as competitors build new NGL pipelines to Mont Belvieu, including Targa Resources Speedway and Enterprise Products Bahia System. Quote, we expect other companies beyond Energy Transfer to consider pivoting excess NGL pipe to natural gas, end quote. Jackson Fryer with East Daily told the Reporter-Telegram. Quote, you'll see more evaluation of repurposing underutilized assets, but I'd frame it as selective and situation-dependent, not a broad industry-wide shift where NGL systems are suddenly becoming gas pipes, end quote. A conversion would only make sense when a few things line up, he continued. The NGL line is structurally long capacity or facing weak recontracting leverage or low rates. The route sits in a high-value gas corridor where incremental egress is scarce and shippers will sign for firm transport. The owner can clear the regulatory/engineering hurdle, moving from liquids under CFR Part 195 to gas under Part 192, brings tighter rules on MAOP, class location integrity management. The company can manage the commercial trade-off. Giving up an NGL artery can be very costly if it's feeding a core fractionation slash export chain. The company hasn't revealed which asset it is considering, but East Daily speculates that the West Texas Gateway system is the likeliest target. West Texas Gateway is a 16-inch NGL pipeline running 570 miles from Winkler County to ET's Jackson County processing plant on the Gulf Coast. The line has a capacity of about 209,000 barrels per day and has been in service since 2012. Other pipelines move NGLs north from the WTG system to Mount Bellevue. WTG was built under Hazardous Liquids Code, Title 49, Code of Federal Regulation, Part 195. Converting the line to gas would place it under Title 49, CFR, Part 192, regulations. The project would trigger tighter rules on maximum allowable operating pressure, MAOP, class locations, high consequence areas, HCAs, and integrity management, per the conversion guidance from the Pipeline and Hazardous Materials Safety Administration, PHMSA. Using a panhandle-style scaling for a modern 42-inch, 400-mile line with about 1.5 BCF/D of capacity, EDA estimates WTG could support only 100 to 200 million cubic feet per day of gas transport with added compression. East Daily capacity and horsepower estimates assume similar MAOP and pressure windows between the reference pipe and a gas conversion. So, Fryer concluded, quote, the theme we expect across the sector is optimization and optionality. Expansions, added compression, debottlenecks, reversals, and some conversions where the NGL business is structurally less strategic and gas margins are clearly better, end quote. Landman Spurs TCU Land Management Course. Thanks to the TV series Landman, interest is growing in the profession. So much so that Tom Tseng, Assistant Professor of Energy Finance at Texas Christian University's Neely School of Business, is offering an undergraduate course on land management and land administration. Quote, in September, I took an informal survey, and a dozen or so students responded with interest, end quote, he told the Reporter Telegram. He then submitted a proposal for a seminar that could turn into a formal course. Tseng said, 26 students have signed up for the 8-week course, and he is recruiting land professionals to address the students. He has also received support from the American Association of Petroleum Landmen, which offers two certification levels, registered and certified. He said he is asking the land professionals to discuss their backgrounds and then address topics from the certification exams. Tseng recalled how, a couple of years ago, a company came to a TCU job fair seeking land interns, and he said there weren't any. He attributed the lack of interest to, first, a lack of understanding about land management, and second, the economic ups and downs of the industry and resulting job uncertainty. The television series, which Tseng noted has done quite a bit of filming on the TCU campus, combined with a number of graduate degree programs, is sparking new interest. His goal with the seminar is to set the record straight, assuring the students they won't have to deal with drug cartels and showing attendees land management is a profession and a lucrative profession at that. Quote, I hope they receive enough information and education that if interviewed for internships, they would be qualified, end quote, he said. Quote, this is truly an introduction, end quote. Tseng acknowledged that landmen, along with petroleum engineers and reservoir engineers, are often in the first wave of layoffs amid an industry downturn. But, he said, quote, there's the graying of the industry. We need that next generation, end quote. Quote, land management is not your grandfather's profession, end quote, Tseng said. Quote, I also want to convey this is such a different profession. It's more technical. It's digitized. It's not Billy Bob Thornton in a pickup, end quote. Land managers put property packages together and then sell or acquire mineral rights, he explained. Consolidation among upstream companies is also playing a role, he said. When ExxonMobil acquired Pioneer Natural Resources, not all Pioneer's properties were strategic. So ExxonMobil is parceling them out and landmen will handle those divestitures. It's also a quasi-legal profession, so landmen have to understand lease terms. Even basic land systems are complex and vary from state to state, Tseng noted. Texas, New Mexico, and Oklahoma have different systems. Tseng will emphasize the importance of title searches and getting clean titles to properties and will cover right-of-way as well, important for pipelines and compression pads. Well, we'll see how it goes. If they enjoy the class, if they get internships, that's how I'll gauge its success. If it works, we can turn it into a course, end quote, he said. EIA says it expects U.S. oil output to drop in 2026. U.S. crude production is expected to trend lower in 2026, according to the Energy Information Administration. The agency's short-term energy outlook forecast, domestic production will average 13.5 million barrels per day in 2026, down about 100,000 barrels from 2025 levels. The decline will break a four-year cycle of rising production. The Permian Basin helped drive production increases of 300,000 barrels a day in 2024 and 400,000 barrels per day in 2025. Permian production grew about 400,000 barrels a day in 2024 and about 300,000 barrels a day in 2025. The EIA forecasts Permian output will continue to rise in 2026, but by a fraction of 2024 and 2025 levels. The modest increases, along with modest increases in Alaska and offshore, will be offset by declines elsewhere in the U.S. In its outlook, the agency also forecasts West Texas Intermediate, which averaged about $65 in 2025, will fall to average of $51 in 2026. Global oil inventories will put downward pressure on prices as they are forecast to continue rising throughout 2026. EIA analysts forecast Brent prices, the global benchmark, will decline to an average of $55 per barrel in the first quarter of 2026 and remain near that level for the rest of the year. Quote, although we expect crude oil prices to continue to fall in the coming months, we assess that both the OPEC Plus production policy and China's continued inventory builds will limit price declines, end quote, analysts wrote. In its outlook, the EIA expects Henry Hub natural gas spot prices to rise to an average of almost $4.30 per million British thermal units, MMBTU, for the winter season, which runs from November to March. That's a gain of 40 cents from the EIA's November outlook. That upward revision was due primarily to colder-than-expected weather in December. However, we expect milder than normal weather in early 2026, and rising production will help moderate natural gas prices following the winter, with the Henry Hub price averaging about $4 per MMBTU next year, end quote, analysts wrote.
The Nightmare After Christmas by Dr. Jimmy Braswell, interim pastor of Bethany Christian Church. A part of the story of the birth of Jesus is a dark chapter. King Herod wanted to know where Christ would be born so he could kill the child. It was the time of the three kings visiting Jesus, who was now about 2 years old. So Herod gave orders for the murder of all children in Bethlehem up to 2 years of age. The Holy Family had been warned and fled to Nazareth. Even though the eternal King of Glory has come, this nightmare reminds us we will still have to endure evil and sinfulness until he comes again. A second part of this nightmare is described in the book of Revelation, chapter 12. The Christmas dragon has come to earth as Satan to wreak havoc with Christians until Jesus comes again. Even after the light comes, promised in Isaiah 9, the people wandered in the darkness have seen a great light. Even after the light comes, we still remain in this world of trial until he comes again. After Christmas comes the bills, the family going back home. The light makes us able to endure in faith and hope, the Christmas dragon and the nightmare after Christmas. We have the church and each other to encourage us. Obituaries. Johnny Randolph Deaver, age 75 of Midland, passed away on Tuesday, December the 23rd. A memorial service will be held at 2 p.m. Friday, January the 9th at Crestview Baptist Church. Bobby Ann McGinn, age 84, passed away on December the 24th. Funeral services for family and friends will be held at Sunset Memorial Garden and Funeral Home in Odessa on Wednesday, January the 7th at 10 a.m. Kathleen Ann Lightfoot passed away on December the 19th. A viewing and private burial was held on January the 3rd. Richard Dale Cole, age 86 of Odessa, died Sunday, December the 21st. Graveside service will be held at 10 a.m. January the 6th at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Eddie Wayne Kennedy, age 64, of Odessa, died Friday, December the 19th. No services have been scheduled. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. A letter to Dear Abby. A co-worker, Erin, has been allowed to work from home since the COVID-19 pandemic, while the rest of us came back to the office. We function alongside each other, much like a small family. We have no drama, no office politics, and an overall great atmosphere. Erin's absence has caused a strain on our team and has fueled resentment. Many feel it's unfair, although these feelings have not been shared with Erin. It so happens that Erin has accepted a new job and hasn't told our boss because she's worried about how the boss will react. When I found out, I did tell the boss even though Erin told me not to. So now I am caught in the snare of my own little trap of deceit. Any advice? And Dear Abby answers, I'm sorry you didn't mention what the benefit structure is at your company. Erin took a job on the QT while still on your boss's payroll. In the state where I live, California, that would be a reason to fire her. I do not regard enlightening your boss about Erin did as deceitful. I think what you did was the right thing to do and loyal to the company. Another letter to Dear Abby. I'm nearly 70, and suddenly I'm remembering things from the past that I haven't thought about in years. Mostly conversations in which I wish I had responded differently. I've never been really quick about responding to things. Now they keep popping up and I can't seem to stop thinking about what I wish I had said. I don't know why this is happening or how to stop it. Any advice? And Dear Abby, of course, has some advice. She says, if this is how you are spending your leisure time, you may have too much of it on your hands. When this happens, try to redirect your thoughts to something else. Then remind yourself that none of us can change the past, but we can learn from it so we don't repeat our mistakes, or errors of omission, in the future. If what's happening leads to depression or anxiety, you might benefit from consulting a therapist about it. And yet another letter to Dear Abby. I have been an avid reader my entire life, and you have always given solid advice, especially when it comes to topics regarding proper etiquette. That's why you were the first person I thought to ask when my friend shared this information from our Catholic priest on how to attend Mass with reverence. Don't cross your legs. Crossing your legs is considered a disrespectful posture. I'm all for proper names and posture, but I have never heard this before. And Dear Abby answers, this is the first time I've heard of it, but your friend may be correct. In some Orthodox cultures outside North America, crossing one's legs is considered to be very disrespectful. Here in America, however, it is not taboo, but it is considered to be too casual and relaxed for church. And you can write to Dear Abby with any of your questions at P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, 90069.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.